Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. From the University of Alberta comes a study about pea protein-derived tripeptide shows bone-building potential. What does that mean? What means something good for everyone over the age of 40 if you want to make sure you maximize the potential to have strong bones and not suffer from osteoporosis? That's just one of many comments I'm going to be sharing with you today, always from peer-reviewed literature, that for whatever reason, and I cannot ascribe an answer, I never see any of the things we do only from PubMed in the mainstream media. Why not? But more importantly today, we're going to play part two, which is a shorter version of what we did last week, and that was a very important discussion about what's really going on with COVID. I'm going to address many different things today, including a listener who found that Ben Swan had made an error, or supposed it was an error, in the fatalities in Sweden. And I'll tell you what we did to try to validate that. But a lot more information. For example, you're going to hear something today you have not heard anywhere. It is a Dr. Carrie Matagi. She is a medical doctor, board certified, with a background in science. And very matter-of-factly, she simply tells you about a vaccine, the one that's being promoted, Moderna, which is the Bill Gates supported and Anthony Fauci supported and the Trump supported vaccine. Well, okay, what does she tell us that's different from what anyone else out there in the public arena or the media is telling us? She shows you what's really in the vaccine and how it could be used, in effect, for the future. And it's not good. And there's no conspiracy theory here. It's just factual information that anyone can validate for themselves. But we never go that far. We should. It's in our own best interest. Also, a short segment today, 7 minutes, on how an independent journalist validated the Swedish COVID strategy, which first failed. They had a very high spike, but no one ever asks, what about every country's high spike? What could that have been from? We looked at the evidence, but now look at the success Sweden is having. Also, I don't have time today to play it, but I was just sent a demonstration by one of Ireland's leading physician scientist, who has advised the government. She is the advisor on public health and infectious disease issues with the European Union, author of many published reviews in the peer-reviewed literature. But you hear her talking about good news on COVID. The number of actual deaths from the COVID virus itself are way lower than anything any statisticians have given us. And she lays out her proof. Then the camera pulls back, and it's staggering. You see a sea of people. I have no idea how many are there. I would guesstimate maybe 20,000 people. So this is happening now. I mentioned this, that there's going to be pushback at some point. None of this is from alternative or complementary medicine. This is all from mainstream orthodox scientists, most of whom support vaccination. They're pushing back because of all the disinformation, partial truths, and complete fallacy concerning COVID. We will be sharing that information with you once we validate it and bring it on the air. That's our program. We have a lot to share. But of course, we always begin with the latest on health and healing. So according to the latest research, and this is on osteoporosis, which we know is a bone disease affecting more than, we guesstimate in the United States probably 5 million people, could be more or less. And it's generally the older you get. And this is the whole idea, this one possible approach to preventing osteoporosis is to stimulate the activity of osteoblasts, those are bone-forming cells, using food protein-derived bioactive peptides. And that's what they did. And they found that the most active one is a tripeptide that originates from split peas. So, same one that you would eat if you cooked it. So that's good news. And by the way, this has been around for a long time. You can go into any health food store in America and look for pea protein, and that's what they're talking about. From the SMS hospital in India, they talked about yoga improving symptoms in heart patients. Atrial fibrillation is the most common heart rhythm disorder. 1 in 4 middle-aged people in Europe and the United States either have it or develop it, and it increases your risk of stroke if you do nothing. It also increases your risk of death, but it also reduces the quality of life, and that's not good. And symptoms of AFib include palpitations, racing or irregular pulse, shortness of breath, tiredness, chest pain, and dizziness. And they're distressing for people. So, of course, all these ads on television tell you take a drug. But the drug has side effects, and it cannot prevent stroke with any certainty. Some patients in this study wore a heart monitor to verify AFib episodes. But then what they found was that yoga for 16 weeks each day had improvements, significant improvements in all areas of their heart, and especially AFib, heart rate, blood pressure, also were measured, all improved with yoga. How about that? That is terrific. So if you want to help your heart, including from blood pressure and from AFib, yoga each day. And that was published in the Peer Review Journal. Now, New Mexico State University published an article in the Peer Review Journal of Sports that when you supplement with fish oil, you can boost the benefits of resistance training, especially if you have sarcopenia. And that's also important because sarcopenia, or age-related muscle loss, is endemic in our society. But researchers found that resistance training, that's where you're lifting weights, or you're using some form of machine that you can control the resistance, that can help prevent muscle loss. Now, when you add fish oil to that, your blood pressure drops, good, saves your life, and you boost the benefits of the exercise. So something more that we can do ourselves that's natural, non-toxic, to ensure a longer life. And by the way, when you lose muscle mass, you lose strength. So we don't want to be losing muscle mass and strength. And meanwhile, the Center for Disease Control links muscle weakness to impaired mobility and mortality in older adults, so that less muscle mass you have, the more likely you are to die prematurely. So fish oils every day. And then a healthy lifestyle for cardiovascular health also promotes good eye health. Texas Tech University Health Sciences published an article in the American Journal of Medicine that showed that they found that ideal cardiovascular health, which is indicative of a healthy lifestyle, was associated with lower odds of ocular disease, especially in diabetic retinopathy. And we have a pandemic of obesity, diabetes, and high blood pressure. They all go together. So plant-based diet, exercise, yoga, stress management, and mindful meditation. And you don't need to suffer from any of that. And also from the University of Alberta, and I'm trying to include stories that also help young mothers and their developing offspring. They found, and this is a research in the child cohort study, and it was published in the peer-reviewed journal Gut Microbes, that vitamin D can help produce good gut microbiome. And that is terrific because that helps the baby's microbiome at 3 months of age. Remember, a baby is born pretty much sterile, and the immune system response is directly from the mother's breast milk. So the healthier the mother, the healthier the breast milk, the healthier the baby. And now they're saying, make sure that the mother is getting vitamin D because that's going to help the developing fetus, which then helps the child. And from Prakruta Hospital in India comes a study about ashwagandha. It's linked to better quality sleep and less anxiety. Let me spell ashwagandha. A-S-H-W-A-G-A-N-D-H-A. DHA. Ashwagandha is a prominent herb in traditional Indian medicine known as Ayurveda. And it continues to gain support from the general community as studies find how beneficial the herb is overall for your well-being and health. Now, we know that it helps reduce cortisol and it helps boost testosterone. Well, that will help men, and it will also help women who have elevated cortisol, helps men also, because when that goes up, that's a danger, and that can increase your risk of heart attack or stroke. And so we don't want elevated cortisol because it's going to reduce our quality of sleep and increase anxiety. So the new trial published in Journal of Curious discovered that among aging men and women, taking ashwagandha improves sleep, mental alertness, and overall quality of life. Good that it was proven, but for centuries the herb has been used to promote longevity, health, and rejuvenation. So all along, those practicing Ayurveda were right on this. So good news there. And finally, from the National Medical University in Ukraine, comes a study that concludes that treatment of children with asthma, allergic rhinitis, and atopic dermatitis should include vitamin D3. Yes, vitamin D3 for asthma, allergic rhinitis, and atopic dermatitis. So that's easy enough to do. Oh, and by the way, from the University of North Carolina, one last thing. Cancer and its treatment can accelerate the aging process in young patients. This is a brand new study that looked at the effects of cancer and chemotherapy and radiation on the aging process. Investigators found that expression of a gene associated with aging is higher in young patients with cancer after treatment with chemotherapy. And this was published in the peer-reviewed journal Cancer. That's the peer-reviewed journal of the American Cancer Society. Now, I believe that a person should have a right to take whatever therapy they desire, and I support them in that. But I also believe that the therapies that could best benefit a lot of people with cancer have been denied and or denigrated, and they shouldn't have been. By the way, just as a point of curiosity, do any of you in this audience remember the all-day anti-cancer symposium I did over at, I believe it was Robert F. Kennedy High School on the East Side. It was the largest one that we could find. And I had brought in Dr. Joseph Issels from Germany, Dr. Lawrence Burton from the Bahamas, Dr. Virginia Livingston Wheeler from San Diego, Dr. Al-Qadi from Panama City, Dr. Stanislav Brzezinski from Houston, Dr. Manuel Ribisi from New York. I had all these, all day long, that we had these doctors. The place was packed for hours upon hours upon hours. So any of you were there, I'd like to know. I'd like to know, what impact did that have? What did you learn? Later in the show, if we have time, I'll take calls on that. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And then I was thinking about something. I got a call from a person, a medical doctor who I know, who said, "Isn't it interesting, Gary, after all these decades, finally mainstream medicine is realizing how important vitamin C is. And I remember when you had that vitamin C conference down at the Waldorf Astoria, and you had Dr. Roger Williams there, and you had Dr. Albert St. George, who won the Nobel Prize for discovering ascorbic acid, and Dr. Erwin Stone, and Dr. Frederick Klenner, who was the physician using the most of it at that time in the United States, and all these other, it was in the Evan and Wilford shoot, and it was packed. He said, I had to stand in the back wall of the Grand Ballroom. That's how packed it was, and went on for like 8 hours. Yeah. I did not have a video. I didn't even take a picture of it. But it was a historic meeting because it brought all the people that actually invented or discovered different applications for vitamins, or discovered, like Roger Williams at the University of Texas. I think he had discovered 4 or 5. Do any of you remember ever being there? Anyone from this audience? That would have gone back a while, all right? You're talking about the early 1970s. If so, I'd like to hear that. I'm always curious who's been around at different events, all right? We're going to take a break, and when we come back, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go to this person that you probably have never heard of, this Dr. Carrie Medege, M-A-D-E-J, and she's going to unfold the story about the vaccines. Now, mind you, everything she is saying, she is also showing you. So we independently validated her statements, but I think this is, well, it's revealing at the very least. Now, whether you vaccinate or not, that's your business, and I support you either way. But I just want you to know what you're not aware of that's going to be in this vaccine and what role it could play in your health and who's behind it. What's their motive? How they control the media, how they control the science publications, how they control what they're willing to support and what they're against, like the entirety of the American media and all of these think tanks and all these AstroTurf groups and all these sock puppets and all these Asian provocateurs. Any doctor that goes on television or on the internet and says, I've been using hydroxychloroquine with zinc and azithromycin or whatever they're using, there's several different antibiotics, and not a single patient has died, and I've treated 500 patients, and doctors are saying that, and yet it's an FDA-approved drug for over 65 years, it's so safe at 200 milligrams twice a week that pregnant women and nursing women are given it. It's safer than an aspirin, and yet you would think that it was arsenic. The doctors are attacked. Their journals will not allow them to say anything. The government won't even touch this. Anthony Fauci, who actually endorsed hydroxychloroquine, and we have that. We actually have him saying that because we have the study from the National Institute of Health showing that it worked on SARS-2, a COVID virus. But now all the money and all the power is on medication and drugs, drugs that can be patented. This is off patent. So it's 19 cents to make this instead of $3,000 for a serious treatment with the new drug coming out that we, the taxpayer, paid and the pharmaceutical industry is going to charge people. So you'll see behind the scenes on all of this. The truth is finally coming out in bits and pieces. Back in a moment with this very revealing comment.
Think about going from human 1.0 to human 2.0. And what does that mean? Well, going from humans as we now know ourselves to human 2.0 has something to do with transhumanism. If you're not familiar with that term, it's about taking humans as we know ourselves and melding with artificial intelligence. Kind of like being in the Matrix, if you've ever seen that movie. And that may seem kind of cool to you. We might have some superhuman abilities, maybe be able to think of something and it happens, maybe have some physical abilities that would be almost superhuman-like. That's the idea, that's what you see in sci-fi movies. And for myself, thinking about this topic, I'm like, well, I have some time. I think that's many years in the future. However, this question, this idea is now right in this moment. We need to make a decision. And I found out that we need to make a decision about this because I investigated the proposed COVID-19 vaccine. And this is my alarm call to the world. I looked at the pros and cons and it frightens me. And I want you to know about this. You need to be very well informed because this new vaccine is not like your normal flu vaccine. This is something very different. This is something brand new. This is something completely experimental on the human race. And it's not just about being a different vaccine. There are technologies that are being introduced with this vaccine that can change the way we live, who we are, and what we are, and very quickly. I think that, some people that you might know these names, Elon Musk, who is the founder of SpaceX and Tesla Automotive, as well as Ray Kurzweil, who is one of the big wigs of Google. These are self-proclaimed transhumanists. They believe that we should go to human 2.0, and they are very big proponents of this. There's a lot of other people that you might know their names. They're also involved with this, so you should look that up. I think the easiest way to explain this to you is to go with one of the front runners for the vaccine and go into a little bit of the history and tell you how they want to make the vaccine. And I think that will speak volumes. So for instance, Moderna is one of the front runners for the COVID-19 vaccine. You should know that Moderna was founded by a person from Harvard, Derek Rossi, and this researcher actually was successful in taking some modified RNA and being able to reprogram a stem cell in the body and change the function of the stem cell. He actually made it genetically modified, okay? So he proved that you can genetically modify something by using modified RNA. So they founded the company Moderna on this concept. It's kind of a new kid on the block, okay? It's not been around that long. In fact, it hasn't even made any vaccine for a human before. It's made no medicine for a human before. This will be their first run. You must know that Moderna was in the news recently because it really fast-tracked. It's like the other companies, it's fast-tracking the vaccine. It's going from phase one to phase two very, very quickly. In fact, it's gone from phase one to phase three in its experiments from March of this year until currently. I mean, that is unbelievable. It usually takes 5 or 6 years. How are they able to do this with the safety and efficacy data that we need? And I want you to know that in phase two, they're only using between 30 and 45 humans. In Moderna's test study, they only used 45 humans. And with the high dose vaccine group, they got 100% of those people got systemic side effects. 100. That's only in the short side effect profile. In the low dose vaccine, 80% got systemic side effects. Now, we don't even know the long-term side effects from that. We would need a lot longer time, right? Maybe years. But we do know, based on previous animal studies of using this technology, that you can expect possibly increased cancer rates, increased mutant genes, mutagenesis, also increased autoimmune reactions. For instance, in some of the ferret studies, they saw that when the ferret was introduced to the virus that they were trying to protect the ferret from after the ferret got the vaccine, they actually had an exaggerated immune response. It actually hurt the ferret. They had more lung inflammation, more lung fluid, even some problems with their liver. It actually hurt them. They had a poorer response. Okay, so those are longer term reactions, and that could be seen with this vaccine, but we don't know the data yet. So it's not without risk. And how are they doing this? Well, they're actually suggesting to use a platform. Let me just explain how they would administer the vaccine. So the vaccine, there's an idea called microneedle platform, okay? This was developed by MIT. And they said it could be very easily produced, okay, and mass produced. This is why they're proposing this technology, and many millions of vaccines could be made quickly. They could also be administered by yourself. So the idea is to get a Band-Aid. It looks like a Band-Aid you buy in the drugstore. It's shipped to you through Amazon or UPS or some other shipping service. You take it out of the package, you put it on your hand like this, and then you take the sticker off, and voila, you've been vaccinated. So how is that possible? Well, in this Band-Aid, it has little tiny spicules, little tiny needles, and this was designed after a snake viper fang bite, okay, or snake viper bangs. So little snake bites. Anyway, in these tiny little spicules, they claim you won't really feel it that much. There's a little hydrogel. It's a material called hydrogel. Inside the hydrogel would be a luciferase enzyme, as well as the vaccine itself. Okay, so what is all that? So first of all, you're getting the vaccine. It's modified RNA or modified DNA. Let's take Moderna, modified RNA. So in that modified RNA, the idea is that the microneedles will puncture into your cell membrane, okay? And this synthetic piece of an RNA, it's a code for the part of the virus, or they could use a synthetic DNA to code for the part of the virus, would go into your nucleus, your body would start transcribing it, would start reading it, and making more of that part of the virus. Well, why would we want to make more of the virus or part of the virus? The idea is your body would get used to seeing it, would know how to make antibodies, and would have an improved T cell response. And the idea is then when you saw it in the future, your body would already know how to fight it and it would be a better response. That's the idea. The problem with that is they're using something called a process called transfection. And transfection is a way that we make genetically modified organisms. Okay, I think you know about those fruits and vegetables. They're not as healthy as the normal wild type fruit and vegetable. So possibly you could extrapolate that to a human. If we become genetically modified, we would not be as healthy, okay? We don't have long-term studies on this anyway. This is unbelievable. And, you know, the vaccine manufacturers have made the statement, this will not alter our DNA, our genome. I say that is not true. Because if we use this process to make a genetically modified organism, why would it not do the same thing to a human? I don't know why they're saying that. Now, if you look at the definition of transfection, it'll tell you that it can be a temporary change in the cell. And I think that's what the vaccine manufacturers are banking on. It's temporary. Or it's a possibility for it to become stable, to be taken up into the genome, and so stable that it will start replicating when the genome replicates, meaning it is now a permanent part of your genome. That's a chance that we're taking. So it could be temporary or it could be permanent. And we would never know that for years down the road, honestly. So here we go. We've got something that can alter our genome. It's a possibility. And another thing on that, if they're altering the genome, what would be the effects? I told you previously some of the side effects, but also we need to know that this is a synthetic piece of DNA or RNA, okay? And if it becomes taken up into the genome of a human, it's synthetic, it's not from nature. And if you look at the Supreme Court justice ruling on synthetic DNA or genes, it can be patented, and patents have owners. So what does that mean for us? What if this gets into our genome? Does that mean Moderna or the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation or the Department of Defense, all of these people who are involved in the patents, or are they somehow going to own part of our genome? It's a possibility. You need to know that. So that's one part of this delivery system, just one. Now let me go to the next. The next part of the delivery system is a luciferase enzyme. Okay, they named it, they patented luciferase. I don't like that name. Luciferase because it has bioluminescent qualities, which means it can produce a light or it has a light source. And all of this would be under your skin and you cannot see it. Now, the luciferase is an idea because they want to make sure that you're vaccinated. They don't trust medical records. They don't trust you saying that you got vaccinated. They want to make sure, and they want to make sure it was successful, a successful transfection, a successful gene modification. So when you get the luciferase enzyme, if you have an iPhone or a special app on the iPhone, you can scan over that area and it will give a digital code, a digital imprint, a digital pattern, something that will identify that you were vaccinated. It holds your vaccination record. It also gives you an ID, a number, a barcode, a branding, whatever you want to call it, a tattoo. It's all the same thing. You now become like a product. So we have that. Now the third thing I mentioned was hydrogel. So hydrogel is actually an invention from DARPA, the Department of Advanced Research Projects Agency. This is kind of a sci-fi kind of a group from the Department of Defense, Pentagon, of the US government. They make these fantastic inventions. So one of them is hydrogel. Hydrogel, you can YouTube, look on YouTube, look at Profusa is one of the companies, DARPA, as well as hydrogel, and you'll find some little 2-minute clips that they describe. So hydrogel is nanotechnology, microscopic little robots. And these little robots, actually, I know it sounds crazy, it's still crazy to me, but it's possible, okay? They can disassemble, reassemble, assemble into and make different things. So with this hydrogel, it's really nanotechnology. So that's something, robotic or something that's artificial intelligence. It has the ability to connect with artificial intelligence. So this means that a human can now connect to directly and gather information from our bodies and gather it and connect with your smartphone, with the cloud, with some other smart device. And once this is done, this is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Think about that. Think about how immediately that could change our privacy. Immediately can change our autonomy. Immediately change our freedoms. This can gather data like your blood sugar, your oxygen, your blood pressure. Okay, those sound great. But it also can gather many other things. It can gather, they say, your emotions or your menstrual cycle, your activity, if you've fallen, your nutrients in your body, if you took medicines. It's a potential to see if you took illicit drugs. It's got a potential to see almost anything that goes on in your body. And all of this information is going where? That has not been addressed. Who's protecting this information? What are they using it for? This is really serious stuff, guys. This is all being proposed to being unveiled in the next vaccine, okay? The other thing to know is with this nanotechnology, hydrogel, artificial intelligence, hookup, just like your cell phone, you can send a text message, you can send an email, but also you can receive them back. So that means we could receive information. What information would be coming back into us? Would it affect our mood, our behavior? Would it affect, how we think or our memories? If you haven't watched the movie Matrix, I think you should. I think there's some truth in that, in that movie. I see so many wrong things with this vaccine. And I see that we are not talking about it in the major media. And I see that, I feel that these companies are outright lying to us when they say they cannot affect our DNA. Because by all definitions that they are using, this can affect our DNA. So guys, I wanted to make this video short because I wanted to get the point across. I wanted you to really do your own research.
All right. Everything that she is saying is accurate. So why isn't this in any of the debate forums? Why is the entirety of the mainstream media supporting do not question the vaccines, don't question their safety or efficacy, don't question any of the new drugs being made, no matter what their cost, or the fact that they have been rushed through, and don't dare take any of the older non-patented drugs that have been proven safe and effective for 65 years that are FDA approved, that have helped thousands of people, including the studies that prove it, don't dare do that. Don't question anything about the COVID or your conspiracy theorist. That's what we're hearing now. And by the way, to give you an example of this, we want to thank Mark for sending this, Mark Crispin Miller. Here is something that's on the agenda immediately in New York State. In fact, this is the upcoming bills in New York for 2020 legislative session. This is fact, not fiction. You can go up online and download this yourself. A6564B/S4244B allows children 14 and older to be vaccinated without parental consent. AD99 allows forced vaccination and medical treatment, allows detainment of individuals who are perceived health threats. Let me repeat that. This is New York State. Forced allows forced vaccination and medical treatment, allows detainment of individuals who are perceived health threats. Did you understand what I just said? Do you get it? In New York State, A099, this new bill would allow forced vaccines and medical treatment. What kind of medical treatment? Doesn't say. What vaccines? Doesn't say. How many vaccines? Doesn't say. And what does it mean who are perceived as health threats? If you are opposed to being vaccinated personally, does that make you a perceived threat? A973/S3899A allows healthcare practitioners to administer all STS vaccines to minors starting at age 9 without parental knowledge or consent. A2316/S2276 mandates annual flu vaccine for daycare through age 18, meaning every child, every infant in America or in New York State would have to take a flu vaccine, and yet the worst science in the world is with a flu vaccine. S298A mandates Gardasil 9 for all children born on or after January 1, 2009. No exemptions. A2841 mandates reporting of adult vaccines to the registry without consent. And yes, there is a new adult vaccine schedule being implemented. I really hope when this goes through that the very first people that they give it to are all the people who are, you know, attacking the anti-vaccine people, or the people whose children have been injured and have to live for the rest of their life with an injured or autistic child. And nobody wants to believe them, especially the liberal community, because they're so, the government can't be wrong. You're a danger to society if you don't take your vaccine. Give it to them first, especially since they won't have a choice. Mind you, this is mandated. Adult vaccines without your consent are coming. A8635/S6717, S stands for Senate, requires publication of immunization and exemption rates, so healthcare practitioners can be disciplined for low vaccination rate among patients. So these are real bills, and you see where they're going with this, using COVID as their cover, and using the fear that if you're not vaccinated, you're a threat to society, and also that you have no freedom of choice. Then they're going to come for you and your child. And they've already come for your child. Why do you think so many people, parents, have moved out of New York for this reason? So you see what she was saying, connect that. But who is looking at New York State, the New York legislative session right now for upcoming bills? And who sponsored those bills? Pharmaceutical lobbyists. Now also, that's separate. On the 18th, we played a short clip by Ben Swan, a highly respected award-winning journalist, about why we should pay attention and learn some lessons from what Sweden's lockdown or non-lockdown did for their citizens, even though they had a big spike at one time, and we later learned out why. After the show, I made a note, and I sent the note to Richard Gale, our producer. I said, Richard, this seems too low to me. Ask Ben to give you the documentation on it. There was a chart, but I couldn't see the documentation. And so Richard sent a letter that afternoon out to Ben, and Richard has a letter. I don't have it in front of me, but it pretty much said, we just aired a segment. You mentioned this. Could you just give us validation of that and what the source was? We haven't heard back from him. We invited him on the program. So in, as we normally do, if we cannot independently verify something, we delete it, and we've deleted that. Now, what we did find, and Richard's going to talk about this, is that everything else in that report was absolutely accurate with multiple sources. And we believe that he may have misconstrued, which is possible, and hence we've sent him the correction so he in turn can correct. And he's a person of high ethics, so I'm sure he will, that the one death, and I believe this is probably up around the 16th when he was reporting, it might have been earlier, in Sweden, it was one per day or less. That's according to the study that we found. So no matter what it was, one per day or less, or maybe, you know, a small number of deaths, the larger point was that they are below a lot of other countries now, and they never had to crash their economy, lock down their economy, and they closed universities but not schools, and other places. And Richard's going to talk about that and what other countries followed suit And what can we learn about this? Because everything we've done wrong. And just to give you some examples of what we've done wrong, and by the way, one other case that shows you how we follow up. This is dated May 11th, 2020. This is to Judy Mikovits. Good afternoon, Judy. I'm following up on my earlier emails and still hoping to hear back from you. There is something you have stated that Gary and I would like to get some verification about. Namely, you stated that Dr. Rossetti and yourself had isolated HIV prior to Gallo's paper claiming its association with AIDS. One, do you have any documentation or paper that confirms this? And if so, could you forward it to me? Two, did Luc Montagnier or the Institut Pasteur provide you with the samples of the virus that were part of your research? Three, after Gallo's paper was published in Science, did you, Rossetti, or anyone else in your lab write or contact the journal regarding its claims? We know there was a long court case between Gallo, the National Cancer Institute, and the French regarding inconsistencies in Gallo's claims and his doctoring the Science papers. There's a big scandal. I appreciate if you could address these questions. We're trying to get a clearer picture about the controversies that still linger regarding the virus's isolation and the claims as the primary cause of agent for AIDS. Many thanks. Much joy to you, Richard. We never heard back, so we sent another letter. Never heard back. So we then, I came on the air, and I said, since we haven't heard back, I cannot support the claim she was making her record, and we deleted the show from our archives. We do that all the time. In fact, just so you know, we have three separate people every single show I do who listen, and if there's anything that they question, they note it, and then after the show, we have to independently verify it, and if we can, great, and if not, then we correct it. That's our responsibility. So we're happy that one of the listeners challenged the one death up to that point. Good for you. We appreciate that. But understand, today, we would have already, giving that person a week, we don't expect someone to get back to us the same day. They're all busy out there. Everyone's busy. But certainly a week's an adequate time. So we've deleted that. But now Richard Gale's here to go a little further into this because the larger story is accurate. So my question is, why didn't you pay attention to the larger story, not just one statistical anomaly, but rather something or inaccuracy, but rather the saving of thousands of lives, which is what is important, and what are they doing that we're not? Now, over the next week, you're going to hear from people, medical doctors and scientists, epidemiologists, and very strong, let's say, mainstream people who are claiming that hydroxychloroquine combination with zinc and azithromycin work. And the proof is there, the studies are there, we have all the peer-reviewed journal studies, and yet you would never know any of this exists if you read the New York Times. So why are they in such a hate campaign against anyone? Google is erasing every single one of these podcasts when anyone makes a claim, Facebook, and the attacks go on against these people's character. So this is the bigger issue. And by the way, just a few more things to show you how corrupt the science is in much of this is today. This is from Newswire. Quote, revealed. United Kingdom officials inflated COVID hospital numbers at height of pandemic. Quote, new evidence has emerged which shows that the United Kingdom hospital admissions for COVID-19 were overreported during the height of the crisis back in April. It seems the patients who were being taken in for other common illnesses were in fact being counted as COVID in the government statistical totals. This latest embarrassing admission comes on the heels of other similar revelations of dubious record-keeping by the government, all of which have been pivotal in giving the false impression to the public that there were COVID deaths that actually took place. Back in July, United Kingdom Health Secretary Matt Hancock was forced to admit how data from Public Health England regarding COVID fatalities were being fraudulently recorded, effectively doubling, I repeat, doubling, counting their deaths forcing the government officials to revise their totals downwards to reflect more realistic numbers. This latest COVID counting scandal in the area of hospital admission shows why the numbers are crucial in how government policies are sold to the public. Professor Carl Hengelhahn, director of the Center for Evidence-Based Medicine at Oxford University, said, quote, "The admissions data is a crucial point. I'd say it is more important than the death data, because it is the best manner of the impact of the disease." End quote. This widespread practice of exaggerating COVID casualties numbers appears to have aided the government in justifying its shaky position on imposing draconian lockdown measures and school closures, as well as hype the imminent release of a COVID miracle vaccine, which the UK government has been developing in partnership with pharmaceutical firms like AstraZeneca and its vaccine financiers, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Hospital admissions for COVID-19 were overreported at the peak of the pandemic, with patients who were taken in for other illnesses being included in the outbreak statistics. And it goes on and on. So here's what this one report today is showing, that the data in Great Britain, and that would also be true for the United States and all these other countries, if you went in and you had a heart attack, if you had a stroke, if you were going in for cancer, diabetes, it was all counted as COVID, because the hospitals made $39,000 for each COVID patient being treated, and they had no treatment, none, zero, that was shown effective for COVID, nothing. Yet they could have treated these people and saved their lives with hydroxychloroquine and three other regular given drugs that the FDA has approved. It's been in use for a long time. Different doctors using different regular drugs. None of this is allowed today. So I just want you to know that's another case where you've been, and also there's, there's another one here. I'll save the other one for a few moments now. Evaluation of the virulence of SARS-2 in France from all causes of death from 1946 to today. You have your doctors Rancourt, Marine Bandon, and Mercier. And this was just reported. And this is a scientific report. Now I'm going to read the abstract and let Richard break it down for you. Quote, this is the abstract. Please, everyone, listen carefully, because you're not going to hear this anywhere else in the media. You can agree or disagree, and that's your right, in part or whole, but do your own homework. We do. And look at the report for yourself. Quote, the abstract from the scientific study. We analyzed historic and recent all-cause mortality data for France and other jurisdictions for comparison using model fitting to quantify winter burden of deaths and deaths from exceptional events. In this case, COVID-19 is put in historic perspective. We proved that COVID peak feature that is present in all-cause mortality data of certain mid-latitude northern hemisphere jurisdictions, including France, cannot be a natural epidemiological event occurring in the absence of a large non-pathogenic perturbation. We are certain that this COVID peak is artificial because, one, occurs sharply 1 month with at an unprecedented location in the seasonal cycle of all-cause mortality. Two, it is absent in many jurisdictions. 34 of the U.S. states have no COVID peak. And it varies widely in magnitude from jurisdiction to jurisdiction where it occurs. Three, we suggest this unprecedented strict mass quarantine and isolation of both sick and healthy elderly together, by the way, and that's what we've been doing, putting sick and healthy together, and separately killed many of them. That this quarantine and isolation is the cause of the COVID peak event that we have quantified, and that the medical mechanisms is mainly via psychological stress and social isolation of individuals with health vulnerabilities. According to our calculations, this has caused some 20,200 deaths in France in March and April 2020. However, even including COVID peak, the 2019-20 winter burden all-cause mortality is not statistically larger than usual. Therefore, SARS-CoV-2 is not an unusually virulent viral respiratory disease pathogen. By analyzing the all-cause mortality data from 1946 to 2020, we also identified a large and steady increase in all-cause death that began in approximately 2008, which is too large to be explained by population growth in the relevant age structures, and which may be related to the economic crash of 2008 and its long-term societal consequences, end quote. Now, we're going to go to Richard in a second, but here's what you should know. No, in fact, let's go to Richard now. Richard, the forum is yours. Explain what I just read to people from this report, and also explain why you believe we have lessons that we could learn from the smart moves and the foolish moves that Sweden has made.
Yeah. This author, just so people know, I had to research. It doesn't state in the actual scientific paper. It was published in Technical Report for this upcoming issue in August. And he's a physicist in Ontario, University of Ontario, and other schools. But he works quantum physics. I think in this paper, what was important to me is the statement that the medical mechanism is mainly be a psychological stress and social isolation of individuals with health vulnerabilities, and not just for individuals with health vulnerabilities, but that's for everybody. You know, when we just consider the number of layoffs and people who have lost their jobs in the millions, particularly in the U.S. and the U.K., and just imagine how much stress these people are in at this moment. And we've all know, and we've heard this numerous times on this broadcast, how stress will have an adverse impact on our immunity and our functioning. Just in our entire cellular metabolism, it will have an effect. And that makes us much more susceptible to the worst of infectious diseases if your immune systems are down. So I find that to be perhaps one of the most important things about the lockdown is really what's it doing to us psychologically, and if we all abide by a mind-body relationship in sustaining health or for the degeneration of health, as the case be, then this is what the lockdown's doing to us. And when we look at Sweden, and we can also look at South Korea. South Korea never really had a full lockdown. The one thing about what Sweden did, it's rather interesting, was that they, by 2018, well, Japan had done this too. By 2018, Japan had already trained 50,000 family care nurses for be able to be mobilized for any infectious outbreaks, for contact tracing. So you can immediately identify. There were 50,000 that were trained. This is 2 years before the coronavirus outbreak. We have nothing like that. We have no preparedness.
Richard, hold on one second. Because our sister station at BBI, we're going to have to leave it here in about 10, 15 seconds. But we're going to go up to the end of the hour for all the other stations carrying us. So for BAI audience, you can go over to prn.fm if you want to continue hearing what we have to say, or tune in tomorrow. All right? Yeah. Now over to you, Richard.
Okay, so when we look at Sweden as an example, and although Sweden had a terrible spike in April and in May, it was one of the worst spikes, and they did not do the lockdown at that time. However, they flatlined. Unlike all the other countries in Europe right now, Sweden has now flatlined. And that's why we hear, not in our news, not in our media, but in media in other countries, and aside from Australia and the UK, which are just poodles of the United States. So, but in these in the other countries, they're looking, wow, look at we should be looking at the Swedish model. And other countries are taking notice of this and are in their own debates and controversies about, you know, lessening the lockdown measures that they've already undertaken. They all are. Italy, Spain, Portugal, Germany, even Belgium. So I think one thing concerning what Sweden did was, and why Sweden's and Switzerland are very different than the United States and UK, is Sweden has very strong measures of protections for the freedoms of its citizens. And so when this outbreak occurred, Swedish officials were torn between how much do we impose government regulations and doing a lockdown as opposed to what the freedoms of the people are. And their decision really was, aside from any views of perhaps herd immunity or anything, which they've even, their health officials and their top health official, Tengren or whatever his name is, has said that was not the main issue, but it was to honor and respect freedom, the freedom of the population. And so clearly that's not something we're doing, as we know, just what you read off about what's coming up for New York City. But nevertheless, Sweden does admit that they weren't prepared when it came to the spike in terms of its hospices and nursing homes and all. And they suffered the consequences of that as well. They learned from it. But they continued. They continued with what their original strategy was. And what we are witnessing as what I can only confirm is that it's now about one death or less per day for the month of August in Sweden, which is far lower than anywhere else that we're seeing in the Eurozone or in the U.S.
And so Richard, then why will not the mainstream media focus upon that, go to Sweden, interview the doctors, epidemiologists, the citizens, the nurses, the hospitals, the government officials, and report that honestly and objectively? Why is it just attack Sweden or anyone else that does anything that varies from our COVID protocol?
There would have to be an agenda. You one doesn't just turn against scientific evidence or even epidemiological evidence or demographic evidence that's staring you in the face and just reject it or deny it without having some agenda. What is that agenda? Well, you know, many have been pointing out, we're in this phase right now of social control. And one can see that the powers that be are utilizing this pandemic and taking advantage of it for its own particular agendas. I mean, there's no other reason why one would avoid, if you're going to call yourself a scientist or a medical health expert, you don't deny what's staring you in the face unless there's a real serious reason for you doing so.
Okay, what we will do over the next week, we will try to bring on people who can try to unpack what Richard just said and show us what could this agenda be. They're not acknowledging the agenda, but the doctor who is just telling us what's in the vaccine, what it can do, how it can program your DNA. I mean, if a person is not concerned about the government and corporations having control over their DNA and messages going into their body, and then having that as a tag, some form of chip, that wherever you go, you can be admitted if you have it, and you would be rejected if you don't, that's serious. So we're going to explore all this and try to make sense of it. Thank you, Richard.
Okay,
and for everyone, we'll be back tomorrow. And again, until such time, I believe in proper hygiene. I believe in wearing a mask. I even wear two. I wear the mask and the shield because forget COVID. I don't want anyone's bacteria and viruses being coughed or sneezed into my face. Also, proper hygiene. I believe in that. When I go to the store, I wear gloves, and I'll call the gloves when I come out, and I wash everything I buy. Proper hygiene, and then keeping your body healthy and safe. These are just common sense and reasonable approaches, and we should all be doing that irrespective of COVID. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.